You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty.
Sitting in a park in Paris, France, reading the news and it sure looks bad. They won't give peace a chance.
She is one of music's most interesting singer-songwriters. Joni Mitchell has been honored with 9 Grammys, including an honorary Grammy, during her long career. And now writer Susan Whitehall helps us understand just what Joni was thinking and feeling through the decades. Her new book, Joni on Joni, Interviews and Encounters with Joni Mitchell, is a collection of 27 interviews with Mitchell spanning the years from 1966 to 2014, and it's where we discover the Canadian-born Mitchell has some deep roots in Michigan. Susan Whitehall is a former music writer for the Detroit News and an editor at the legendary Cream magazine. Susan, welcome.
Thank you, Cynthia.
Where do you think Joni Mitchell stands in the pantheon of America's singer-songwriters?
Well, you know, she's one of our few female musical geniuses, along with Aretha Franklin and people like that. And Joni, of course, wrote virtually all of her own material, so this is huge. She just didn't always get the respect, the attention that she deserves. But she is getting it late in her life, late in her career.
I know they just had a big 75th birthday bash for her. Vanity Fair wrote it up, and Hollywood's Biggest and Brightest came out to pay her tribute.
And it's great that she was well enough to enjoy it.
Why not? Why did she not get that respect?
Well, when you look at the times, I discovered this in researching and editing these interviews with her over the years. She was really treated as the Mrs. when she was first interviewed, along with her first husband, Chuck Mitchell. He was the star. In reality, he was a star before she was here in Detroit on the folk scene. But also, there was just a sexism to it, and she was a cute chick. And guys would always say to her, well, you know, why don't you be a model? Why do you want to be a folk singer? You know, it would be so much easier. But then in the same breath, they would ask for her if they could use one of her songs, you know, and they loved her material, although they'd make fun of her, too. It was just the kind of the way it was in the 60s. You were not always treated on a par. And she, you know, would wear false eyelashes. She kind of played the game a little bit in the early days until David Crosby told her to cut that out.
And
she kind of adapted the more California look.
Well, let's start with the fact that she grew up in Canada and displayed musical talent at a very early age.
She did. I think her isolation, there wasn't that much to do. There's long winters in Saskatchewan, and she was an only child, and she had polio. I really think that factored into a lot of this. She was alone in the hospital for quite a while, and she'd start singing to herself in the hospital room, and the boy in the next bed would tell her to stop it, and she'd sing louder. So that, she was a creative child because her parents, her mother especially, did encourage it in domestic ways and creative ways. And she had all this time to do all that sort of thing. And this was the pre-TV era when children had to kind of amuse themselves. That helped.
And music did that for her. What brought her to Michigan, to Detroit?
She met Chuck Mitchell, and he was a tall, good-looking guy. That was his first trip to Toronto as a folk singer. That was his first out-of-town trip. And he had been living in downtown Detroit since the early 60s. He's from Rochester, grew up out there. And they met. It was kind of instantaneous, very much of an attraction. And he proposed to her, she says, right away, within hours. She didn't come back with him right away, but she took the train down from Toronto to visit him in Detroit, and she basically didn't leave. They got married. This would be 1965.
When I'm thinking, as I read these interviews and kind of exploring that Chuck and Joni story here, they lived in the Cass Corridor, and they were kind of like an boho it couple, weren't they?
They were, absolutely. There was no other explanation why this couple was being written up in the news and featured in the Free Press as well, because they weren't that well known. Chuck was on the folk scene, and then they became Chuck and Joni on the folk scene at the Chessmate, at the Raven, at the Living End, you know, but that wasn't enough. It was enough. It was enough for them to be the cool kids. And they had that picturesque apartment, and she was making the curtains, and she was very crafty. They were very attractive. And you can see the photos in my book I got from the Detroit News that I always knew were there.
Yeah, and dug them up. But I have to point out, I want to just read the very end of that first Detroit News story, February 1966. I am quoting here. Chuck said, Joni and I have developed our act. We are not just folk singers now. We do comedy, sing some ragtime, do folk rock. We're ready for the big clubs now. Joni nodded her approval as any dutiful wife would do.
Yep.
Okay. You're a writer. You're an editor. How do you describe that? The tone of those early interviews?
That's what I think it was important to have that in there. 1966, that was a little much even for 66. As a teenager, a young teenager, whatever, I would have bridled at that had I read it. I was a Free Press reader at the time.
Yeah.
It's kind of probably the combination of an older male reporter, and Chuck might have been doing this with the talking, and she was nodding. And he kind of assumed she was nodding like a dutiful wife. Now, Chuck says quite the opposite. They had a very feisty Irish marriage, according to him.
Meaning?
And so she was always very outspoken and very tart. And they would argue all night while they were playing cards and smoking and having fun, and just a very lively, passionate kind of affair, marriage.
And what fractured the marriage?
I think they were, you know, as she said in the song, he carried me, I had a king, he carried me off to his country for marriage too soon for her. It was right after she had given up her baby into foster care and then later adoption. I think that was a cloud over the marriage because she felt he should have insisted that she bring the baby to Detroit. And he felt it was her decision to make.
Because this was not his baby.
We should hasten the point.
People will understand that when they read your book, Joni on Joni.
She was pregnant by a college boyfriend, art college. And that was a cloud over. And also she was starting to take off as a songwriter. She was writing her own material.
And she wrote two of her most famous songs while living in Detroit.
More than that, more than those two songs. But yeah, Circle Game and Both Sides Now. She was in a little coffee shop, one of the huddle houses, not too far from Cass or right on Cass. They're gone now. And that's where she did her writing. So not only that, but she had a Motown guy, Chuck found him, actually do the sheet music for her songs, which was an important step in order to get her songs covered. He also had her set up a publishing company, which was also vital because she would still be in the folk scene if it wasn't for Judy Collins and others. You know, Tom Rush was the first one covering her songs.
And the seasons, they go round and round, and the pains of ponies go up and down. We're captive on a carousel. Behind from where we came, and go round and round and round in the circle.
When and why did she leave Michigan?
The marriage did start to fracture because she was starting, they had really split the act in two. She never felt that they gelled well as a duo. He was into more of a dramatic acting comedy, as he said in that interview, and she wasn't. She was strictly into it was musical for her. So she started doing her own thing and going off on gigs on her own, and she was getting a lot of attention because of these songs, especially Both Sides Now, Circle Game. So she was having these gigs without him, and there were a couple of affairs, and one notable one was with Leonard Cohen. So Chuck remembers one last fight when she threw a candelabra, I believe it was, at him. He claimed she missed, but that was sort of one of the last fights. But she did come back to Detroit a few times, unbeknownst to him, and she still had a key, and she would have a guy friend help her take some of their treasures out of the apartment, the Verona, all the way five flights up. She would carry stuff down, and Chuck finally had enough of it, and he changed the locks, which she also refers to in the song "I Had a King."
Power of moons. There's no one to blame, no.
I'm talking with Susan Whitehall about her books, Joni on Joni, Interviews and Encounters with Joni Mitchell. Susan edited some on really interviews that people may have never heard before. You dug up some gems. You know, when I think about the arc of her career, what do we learn, Susan, from the interviews about where she saw her place in the music business? And how did that fit with the way the music business, when I'm talking record executives and producers and critics, saw her? Was there a disconnect?
Oh, yeah. And the fact that I was editing this during this the whole Me Too year was not lost on me at all. They were treating her like a commodity, and that she just hated that. She was constantly complaining that the record executives wanted her to look pretty. They wanted a certain demure attitude. She was talking in the 80s when the MTV was going full throttle. She had to do videos and felt that she couldn't do a serious video. She had to do these crazy ones, and she had to look a certain way. So she constantly thought that was wrong and beneath her, and she always had a high opinion of her art, and she wanted to do things for art's sake.
Well, and Joni had some years, and here, like you mentioned, here's the 80s, it's the MTV era, you have Cyndi Lauper, you have Madonna doing their thing that was perfect for video, and you have this poet that had a completely different vision. Who did she respect music-wise? Who influenced her, or who had her respect?
Oh, well, she respected Dylan, despite the fact that the Daily Mail took out of my book all the sleaze and kind of terrible things she said about him, calling him a plagiarist and all that, and saying he adopted his voice from Hillbillies, stole it from Hillbillies. But she also said that positively 4th Street revolutionized songwriting for her, because when she heard it, she was blown away that you could write in such a conversational style, like you're talking to a friend. Mm. She loved that. And in fact, she was always looking to simplify her lyrics and make them like that, make them very direct.
So you're sitting across the table almost having a conversation. You know, interesting, we need to spend a moment talking about her ex-husband, Chuck Mitchell. He's a good – why does he win the Good Sport Award? He's going to be with you at the Baldwin Library in Birmingham.
Yep, on December 3rd, on that Monday. He's a good sport because she's trashed him over the years, you know, over her giving up her daughter. And, of course, she has a bigger podium than he does in terms of telling the story, which is why I was very happy to do this book, in part to kind of draw open the curtain on their Detroit years and tell his side of it. He has a real interesting viewpoint. And, you know, he was in that apartment with her for 3 solid years in Detroit, and he saw the early songwriting. He saw her gift develop, and he does a Circle Game and often another song or two of hers in his own gigs, which he's playing the Greenwood on the 30th here in Ann Arbor. So it's, you know, he's got a mixed mixed views, and he's got an interesting viewpoint, and I think he's working on his own memoir too that he's writing. So He's got his story, and there's very few people that we talk to who saw her before the big California years like that. He saw her take off like a shot. He doesn't think she could have raised her child and done what she did. We wouldn't have Joni Mitchell as we know it had she also been a mother back then. Hard to agree or disagree with that, because from today's viewpoint, women do it all the time. But that's what he feels at the time in 1965. So, yeah, he's a good sport because he'll get up there and he'll talk. And we'll talk about the folk scene in Detroit as well, not just Joni and he. But they were a very important part of that, and that was part of really influenced her. So that apartment was like a crossroads to people like Neil Young. When he would come to town to Detroit to play, he'd stay overnight with them, Gordon Lightfoot would, and all those guys. That also helped as a springboard for her, because Tom Rush would hear her new songs and say, hey, I like that. I'm going to play that for Judy Collins. I think she might like that. So you can see where Detroit was really key, crucial in her development.
That should be a really, really interesting night. So again, that's Monday, December 3rd, the evening of December 3rd at the Baldwin Library in Birmingham. Well, it's a fascinating book, Joni on Joni, Interviews and Encounters with Joni Mitchell, edited by Susan Whitehall. Who better to do it than you, Susan? Thank you so much for sharing this with us, and it should be really fun doing that event with Chuck on the 3rd.
Yep. I'll be at Pages on the 28th, too, in Detroit.
All right. Thank you so very much.
Thanks.
Support for arts and culture coverage comes in part from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs.
They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. With a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved